You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to this episode of Critical Mass, Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi. I host this business talk show, which airs live on Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, soon to be Pacific Daylight Savings Time. If you're listening to this show as a podcast, I would encourage you to listen live during our broadcast times, heard exclusively on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you make better decisions. We do this by interviewing thought leaders and peer executives from around the country who have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. To learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com, and select the Orange County area for information about Orange County or one of the other 18 journal areas that they have for specific markets across the United States. Critical Mass Coast to Coast is brought to you through a partnership of our business, Critical Mass for Business, with Executive Forums business owners in select markets across the United States. Executive Forums is an international organization committed to helping members take their business to the next level. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, was the first book ever written about the peer group experience for Amazon.com. You can find it simply by typing my name, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. If you'd like to learn more about the CEO Peer Group experience, I would suggest you check out our website at www.executiveforums.com. If you're listening to the show live today and you may want to join the conversation, then off of the octalkradio.net website, find the community chat room, log in with your Twitter ID, and post your thoughts. During the show, our producer, Paul Roberts, will be checking your comments and suggestions and possibly bring them to my attention, and possibly I'll be able to bring them into one of the three interviews that we have scheduled on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. So let's turn our attention to our first of three guests. It's my pleasure to welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast, Tomoko Casey of Kinseo Taping. Welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Hi, this is Tomoko.
I'd like to welcome to the show, and I'd like to ask that we begin by having you tell us more about your firm.
My company, Kinseo USA, is a global company that wholesales a product called Kinseo Text Tape worldwide. And also, this tape was developed by my father, who's a chiropractor, who still continues to practice in Japan. Aside to the product, we also have an education division that we teach medical practitioner how to utilize the tape and educate them about the concept so they can use the product for any condition they might encounter for the usage.
And what would be some applications for this tape?
The range to the application can be from the typical weekend warriors, chronic pains, or also a lot of elite athletes uses it. As you saw, a lot of exposure during the Beijing Olympics on, for instance, on Carrie Walsh. She was one of the gold medalists for the beach volleyball. She had it on her shoulder. So that was used to possibly enhance, but also for preventative injury. So for any muscular or joint support, or if you have some circulation, maybe lymphedema or swelling, the tape can be used for different condition by applying it on different ways on your body.
Interesting. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about the application and the inspiration that your father had for the tape. And we'll get to that a little later during your interview.
Sure.
Okay, I'd like to ask you of all the things you've learned in business, Is there a particular experience or a key lesson that you've learned that helps you lead your firm today?
Well, going back to the exposure that we had on the Olympic and you know, providing the product in the sponsoring some of our medical practitioners in the past, we have always supported any medical practitioner who wanted to bring the tape to any sports event. So this 2008 taping that we endorsed to some of the medical practitioner was not the first, but we got a big exposure on this. And since that, we had the different competitors coming in, or different products or education company coming in and offering more of a simple course, or a course that you can take maybe over a weekend or over a day. And the challenges with the economy and other companies offering maybe cheaper or also lower priced course, our challenges was we had to strategize for that. But we always put importance on our education part of it, because if you don't know how to apply it and what you're applying it for, you're not going to get the best result of the tape. And we decided to make our education our priority and actually emphasize on that. So that was a key lesson, that we decided to stick with what we believed in the education, and it's still helping us to kind of being the leader in the industry, I believe.
Tomoko, if I could ask you, you're here in the U.S., and I understand you're in beautiful Albuquerque. Father in Japan, and if I understand correctly, he still is in Japan?
He goes back and forth. Also, he's does a lot of speaking engagement to introduce not only kinesio, but also about the just the philosophy of how to take care of the body, and how other than the kinesio tape, he has other modalities that he has developed over throughout this year. So he does a lot of lectures, but he primarily lives between Albuquerque and Tokyo.
Okay. Well, you know, we're always looking for what I think of as learning moments. In other words, opportunities where the listening audience, who may be in very different and probably are in very different lines of industry or fields than you are, can learn from your example. So I guess I would ask, because I believe having the inventor of a product or the leader of a company out speaking to educate, just applications of the product, but on topics that are of interest to the people who would use the product, is a great strategy to create brand differentiation in the marketplace. Could you talk about how, is if that's applicable to kinesio tape, and maybe your direct experience in how your father's speaking on subjects has benefited the firm?
Well, the concept, you know, maybe 20 years ago when we in the United States, when we brought back the kinesio into education 15 years ago, it was very hard to kind of get in the industry where applying a piece of tape is going to do something to the body. So his philosophy was not just about the tape or the product, but just kind of having people understand how the body works, what the fascia, which is the skin, it has a lot of I'm not a medical practitioner, but a lot of sensory input to the body, and therefore can do a lot of magical things. So for him, at the beginning, you know, in the United States, I don't believe Dr. Kasu's name were that known. You know, so it wasn't things that, even if we said we want to do a lecture, people were not that interested. So what we decided to do is to really emphasize on teaching the medical practitioner community, and kind of built a group of strong instructors in different medical fields. So in the United States, we have over 60 instructors that are in the physical therapy group or the chiropractor groups, occupational therapy, and athletic trainers. Those are the main, in massage therapy. And those people have really taken in Dr. Costa's concept and has spread it out for us by teaching this course. So he's actually not doing the actual teachings, but really educating our instructors and then going out and teaching it to the medical practitioners. And we owe a lot to them, who really is out there, you know, always promoting and talking about our product and educating more and more medical practitioners.
Right. So he's creating people, he's training people who then go out and do and carry the message into the marketplace, and then they become the practitioners. Okay. Thank you.
Right.
You know, I'm wondering about, where do you see the current opportunity for growth facing Kinesio tape, and if you're taping, and if you could share kind of the next opportunity that you see for your taping products with our listening audience, I think that would be interesting.
Currently, we focus mainly on the medical community, but because of more and more practitioners are using it on their patients, and it's just because it's becoming more and more visual on the media, our next stage will be into the retail level and making it more of a self, simple step application, so they know exactly how to tape it, because there is a technique to it. And also we're looking into, we're already doing some research and case study in how the taping works in the veterinarian market, like such as, you know, horses and animals. We have even have a study on birds, like flamingos, using it on their bow legged. And so I think that could be another, that's another market that can mainstream into the use of Kinesio tape.
And I would imagine that that market is probably a very large market, potentially, for your taping products as well.
It could be, especially last year we had an opportunity to attend the Kentucky Derby. And the the horses, we applied, had some great results on with their gaits and some of their joint support. So we're already seeing some good results on the larger animals too.
Wow, what an exciting, you know, what an exciting opportunity to move your products into another market, but a market that I can imagine has, you know, while it's different, has many similar requirements and benefits to, you know, how you're helping athletes and weekend warriors, I think, as you said, in the open. So if someone would like to learn more about Kinesio taping and kind of the history and the products, what is your online presence, and how would you, where would you tell them to go to learn more about your company?
So we have a global website. It's www.kinesiotaping.com. And when you log into that site, there's two home pages, and one is the education side where practitioner can possibly learn about the seminar that we're hosting nearby, and more about the concept and the philosophy. And then we have another page that is more focused on the product or some of the events that we're sponsoring. So there's two logins, and on each of those logins, we also have a newsletter that you can sign up to receive, and you get some of the stories that related with Kinesio. We also have a toll-free number, which is 1-888-320-TAPE, which is 8273. And we have customer service. We're open Mountain Standard Time, 8 to 5. And so anybody can call about any questions that they have regarding to the tape itself or the education part of it, too.
And would you be so kind to spell your website?
Sure. It's Kinesio, and it's taping, taping.com.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the time that we've spent on Critical Mass Coast to Coast discussing your unique product and your company, and I want to thank you for being a friend of Critical Mass, the radio show, and I appreciate the time you spent preparing and participating in our program today.
Well, I appreciate your invitation. Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
You too. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We have two other guests today on Critical Mass Coast to Coast, but before we talk with our second guest, Tricia Wellenbach, president of Sandcastle Strategy Group, we're going to take this moment and take a break.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi. Say, if you're listening live today on www.octalkradio.net, log in their community chat room, post your thoughts. If you have something you'd like Paul, my producer, to bring to my attention, and I'll, if appropriate, bring it into the conversation. I hope you are enjoying the show, and we're going to turn our attention, as I said, now to of Sandcastle Strategy Group, and we're going to be talking about her firm, which works with top-level executives, like those of you in our listening audience, you know, the C-suite, CEO, COO, CFO, etc., to develop strategic planning initiatives, and also her firm couples that with their service on around executive coaching. So, Tricia, welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
It's a pleasure to have you here today. Let's get right into the interview, and by me asking you a very simple question, I gave a little bit about your firm, but could you share with our audience more about what your firm does?
We come in and work with, as you said, C-level executives around typically a critical change initiative that they are trying to implement or potentially even consider ahead of a big change initiative, and try to help bring some clarity as to what the direction might take, who might need to be at the table as they decide the direction to go in, how they determine what the success factors are, and really help them define the metrics that are going to measure their business objectives against their financial goals, their human capital goals, et cetera.
Well, that sounds like a very comprehensive and somewhat maybe challenging work. How long have you been in the industry, and a little bit more? You're in the Philadelphia market, is that correct? I'm sure you serve
correct,
more than the greater Philadelphia area, but you know, kind of what is your footprint, and help me understand that a little bit better, please.
Yeah, pretty much New York to D.C., that part of the corridor, and working with companies, big and small, lots of entrepreneurial companies I work with. I find that they're very interesting evolutions that entrepreneurial companies go through as they get to critical growth spurts and opportunities, and some of the external factors that they have to deal with are ones that they don't necessarily have a lot of experience in if they're new to building a business. So those are actually some of my most interesting work. How do you take a really fabulous company of visionary entrepreneurs who've put together a terrific business plan and growth platform, and now they've achieved that growth platform, they're bigger, they're not necessarily communicating in ways that are comfortable for them anymore because there's more people at the table with opinions and more influencers from the outside that are influencing how they make decisions. So that's actually some of the work that I like the best.
How has and I agree with you. I think in our direct work here on the West Coast in Orange County, California, that entrepreneurial spirit and those various growth stages that companies go through, I'm glad to hear that you're able to help those entrepreneurial companies navigate what are some pretty challenging times as they scale their organizations and bring in outside influences, etc. So a different question as it reflects back on you,
sure.
As far as of all the things that, you know, business lessons that you've learned and working with your clients and building your practice, what is your guiding principle for how you, as the president of Sandcastle Strategy Group, are leading your firm?
Both in the work that I do with the firm and also with my clients, it's all about really taking the long view for where you want the business to go to, and to really spend a lot of thoughtful dialogue around what are the intended consequences of the trajectory we're on, and then what are the unintended ones. I like to work it through really far for people because there are a lot of things that you can't plan for. And I think that if you spend good, thoughtful time with smart people at the table and you take their counsel and incorporate that into the strategy and the execution plan, you will then be prepared for the unexpected that you didn't think about. And if you can work through all the stuff that you have control over, you, I think, are in a much better place when the things that you don't have control over come along. I think that a lot of times growth modes or big change initiatives don't factor well enough around the unintended consequences for the decisions, and really don't take a hard look at all the things that they can control and plan for, so then when the unexpected comes along, it's more of a hiccup and not an earthquake, to use a metaphor that may ring true in California.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Hopefully we don't have that for a while, but
you know,
that's a very powerful concept, unintended consequences. I am personally fascinated by that. You know, our practice out here on the West Coast, in addition to the radio show, is working with CEOs and top executives, kind of helping them to make better decisions. And many times it can be those unintended consequences that you spending more time kind of understanding and dealing with than the intended consequences of a decision, especially in, I would think, in your area of expertise, which are strategic decisions about moving the company forward with a longer-term view, which is clearly more challenging, especially with what I think we've gone through here from the past few years relative to the economy and the trajectory, to use your word, on what right. many businesses thought, the path they thought they were on, versus maybe what the path that they'd been on by virtue of, you know, the economy and what has happened in the marketplace over the past few years.
Right. I think the other part of the strategic discussion is around the execution part of the strategy. And I think that we short-circuit success when we don't spend really good, make really good decisions about what the execution should look like. Who should be accountable for it, and who can actually really do that work? And I think that this works in big enterprises as well as, you know, smaller enterprises. I think that we get comfortable with the people that we're at the table with, and now we have a strategic direction that we want to go in, and we really have drilled it down, and we understand what the execution component is, and then we don't necessarily always ask the next question of, you know, well, is the human capital around the table going to be able to deliver on the execution and so then help the company achieve the strategy? And sometimes companies and strategies outgrow the people, and sometimes the people outgrow the companies and the strategies. And it's hard for us, particularly in the entrepreneurial space, where it's usually a couple of very committed, visionary individuals who may have, you know, gone through interesting experiences together as they've built this company, to say, you know what, maybe this isn't the right place for me anymore. It's a hard discussion.
And I think that discussion is amplified given the perception of the job market and the business and the side of everyone's firm right now. And I think we're starting to see movement in a positive direction relative to the economy and hiring in some sectors, etc. But I think people, my sense is, executives are and employees are reluctant to change. It's dangerous to be the newest member of the executive team in the company. I think there's that perception out there as well in many quarters.
No, I would agree. And this is also a conversation I have with a lot of clients about, you know, you've now got a new strategy in place and you know that you need a certain type of talent. And you go out and you bring in the rock star who's been doing really extraordinary work in another venture. And what are the expectations around the deliverables for that rock star? And really, what role do you have in the maybe potentially even the CEO or COO suite to make sure that that rock star can deliver? You know, I think we forget that people are allowed to have a learning curve. And they may, it doesn't mean that they can't do extraordinary work, but people have to be given a chance to grow into a role. And I think particularly at those very high levels, we have a very short patience curve around that.
Oh, clearly, yeah. The and the challenging economy and the tight demand has, I think, put even more pressure on people to show results quickly, especially if they're a high ticket employee to a company. So,
right? No, I agree 100%.
I wonder if I could ask you, because we didn't have a chance I don't think, fully explore this part of your practice, which is the executive coaching. You know, here in Southern California, my business partner is an executive coach and has been for a number of years. And I'm a big proponent and believer in the power of executive coaching and how it can help transform individuals and companies, especially in the C-suite area. Right. Would you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that the value of executive coaching is, first of all, it's the, you have to feel very comfortable with the person that you're working with on both sides of the equation there. And I'm very thoughtful about who I choose to work with, and I really encourage people who are looking to engage an executive coach to really look around and talk to a few people, because it's a very personal relationship, and you have to be very trusting of the person, and they have to have a style that you can kind of relate to. You know, and I think that there are a couple of different ways that you can get executive coaching. I think that there's really excellent one-on-one executive coaching you get, and I also think, and this has happened to me, there's been terrific executive coaching that I've gotten in you know, small group settings, where I'm talking with peers of mine in, you know, in a peer coaching methodology, and really learned a lot from that. And there's a little bit of a safety net around that when you're talking. Sometimes it's a little intimidating, but sometimes you can bring an issue to the fore that, you know, you can talk a little bit more concretely about, or you can get a wider diversity of perspective on how maybe people who are in the same position you are solved a problem or worked their way through an initiative or an issue in their company, whether it be on the production side, the financial side, or the people side. So I think it's a great opportunity for growth. I think that, you know, the thing that has to happen is that the executive has to be committed to this. I think particularly if there are boards involved that may recommend that the C-suite team get executive coaching, it doesn't work so well. I think if it comes from the individual, I do my best work when the individual is really wanting to do this, because it can sometimes maybe feel a little bit like more homework than you want to do, and you're focusing more on you instead of the company and what the issues are for the company. And my approach to it is, if we can get the focus on you and grow you as a leader, as a manager, and evolve your style, your company's going to benefit in, you know, leaps and bounds. But that's sometimes hard for people to realize.
In that answer, you brought something out as well that I, as you may be aware, part of the reason why we do Critical Mass Coast to Coast is I believe that business executives learn very well from the experiences of their peers. You talked about that as your kind of peer mentor coaching relationships, and I call them, my term for it, are CEO peer groups. I know that Ken is a big advocate in the Philadelphia market with executive forums for these kind of activities, and so I was encouraged to hear you say you see value in that type of a relationship as well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and actually there's some data out when you look at some of the stuff that's going on in the mentoring world. You know, for years we talked about, you know, getting a mentor, you know, in one-on-one mentoring, and there's actually starting to see better results in group mentoring situations. So I think that it even at kind of mid-management through to most senior management, it probably has great value. I know that there was a time I was working on building a business, and I knew that I needed some more capacity and people who would really challenge me. And I picked 7 people, and they worked with me for almost a year. And they were kind of like my self-selected peer-to-peer group. This was way before peer-to-peer was even a conversation. It was really terrific. And they became some of my most trusted, not only business colleagues, but also I developed a long-standing personal relationship with many of them, because they were just very much willing to get in the trenches with me and work the problems through, and they weren't afraid to challenge me. And again, I was the one who invited them in, so I was open to having people say to me, think about why you want to do it this way. And let's think about what a better way to do it, or who needs to be working on this with you and for you. So I learned that early on in my career.
And thank you for sharing that. And I on this with you and your experiences, and I'm glad to see that you kind of were an early adopter and an early proponent of what we do for, you know, how we see it helping business owners. I'm wondering if I could ask you with the time that we have left, Tricia, if you could share with us an opportunity for growth facing your firm and what it means to your firm as you're able to successfully leverage that growth opportunity.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Timing is always an interesting factor in life, but just had an opportunity to work with a pretty interesting new client. Business is going through a tremendous amount of change and re-engineering, and taking the client on had some risk and had some benefit, and it meant making some decisions about other clients that I may or may not take on. And because a decision needed to be made quickly, I couldn't work it necessarily through all the decision tree processes that I normally would have, but made the decision to go ahead and commit to the client and the project. And literally, it's, you know, just a couple of weeks old at this point that I've been doing the work, and I'm taking the long view on it, and hoping that that this decision will pretty much move the firm to a new place. And if we do the work well, and we're good at what we do, I think it will open tremendous opportunities down the road for me and for the firm. And, you know, time's going to tell on that. And there are a lot of unknowns in this project and the work, and there are a lot of things that I can't control. So I really had to step out of my comfort zone a little bit and say, you know, could I take on an opportunity that had this many unknowns? And what would that mean for the firm? What would that mean financially for the firm? What kind of talent did I have to have with me at the table, et cetera?
Well, I'd like to make the offer that at some point possible future, we'll have you as a future guest, and we can talk about now with the benefit of hindsight how this is all rolled out and impacted your firm.
That would be fabulous, and I hope it's a really good conversation, that it's all good stories.
Me too. I'm sure it will be. I don't know you that well, but I'm very confident that it will be. I wonder if someone would like to learn more about Sandcastle Strategy Group. How would they find you on the web?
www.sandcastlestrategies.com.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the time that you spent with us here on the show. Thanks for being a friend of Critical Mass, the radio show, and I have enjoyed our conversation.
My pleasure. Have a good evening.
You as well.
Take care.
Tricia Wellenbeck, president of Sandcastle Strategy Group, was just our guest, and we have our third and final guest, Carol Borden, who is the CEO of CB Transportation. She'll be joining me after the break, and we're going to be talking about her firm, which is completely virtual. Her quote-unquote headquarters are in suburban Philadelphia, and her team is scattered between Seattle, Boston, Philadelphia, South Carolina, and a few other locations. So stay tuned for that conversation, but first let's hear about Smart Business Magazine.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi. As I said before we went to the break, I have great pleasure in having Carol Borden, CEO of CB Transportation, as our third and final guest today on this episode of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. Carol, welcome to the radio program.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Why don't we set the stage a bit, Carol, by asking you, what is it that your firm does? And we're going to talk about how you do it, being virtual, but talk to us about what it is the firm does.
Okay, sure. What CB Transportation does is provide intelligent truckload and distribution solutions to our corporate customers throughout North America. We work predominantly with mid to large size retailers and manufacturers, and based upon their specific needs, link them to our in-depth base of trucking companies, railroads, and warehouses.
And, you know, when I said in the open you're a virtual firm, I also understand that your firm is a significant firm as it relates to, let's say, revenue as well. Are you comfortable to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. We had, made a decision when we started the company about 5 years ago that we could try and follow a more traditional model of have an office, have the team come there, work together in the same space. But I had the gentleman that I started up with was in Boston. I'm in Philadelphia. And pretty soon after that, we started bringing on some other folks in different parts, and I realized, you know what, we could spend a fortune doing it this way. We also said to ourselves, you know, how many times do people really walk down the hall to have a face-to-face conversation with somebody, even if they're in the same building? More often than not, they pick up the phone, they get a quick answer, they shoot an email to somebody, and they kind of do business that way. So we said, let's see how this works. Let's get it started, and it's been incredibly successful. We've started out with basically three of us back in 2006. We're now up to 10, and we've got employees now in five different states.
Your firm is a successful firm. I say that because I know you've had direct exposure with Ernst & Young and their recognition. Would you be open and willing to kind of talk to us a little bit about your experience?
Sure, absolutely. So to back up just a little bit, we started off and were fortunate that I was able to take a couple of my large corporate accounts that I had been with my other company, and I can talk about that later on. But so we started off kind of moving rapidly, and it was a great start for an emerging company. I had become a part of WeBank, which is the Women Business Enterprise National Council, when I was getting on a corporation's website, and they had asked me if I was a woman-owned business. I said, yes, I was, and they asked me who certified me. It was the first time I ever realized that you need to be certified, or there was an organization out there that was nationally recognized that did this. So I had, got myself, certified by WeBank, and then started to see some different opportunities that came across, and one of them happened to be Ernst & Young that was looking for entrepreneurial women that had, rapidly growing companies. I figured, let me give it a shot. I did. I got selected in 2009. We were one of nine women. I was one of nine women that was chosen, and that was very, very instrumental in really in the growth and the perspective of the company. I learned that the importance of really thinking big. Prior to that, we were doing well, but I was looking at growth in terms of more incremental increases, to go from 2 million to 3 million, 3 million to 5 million. And after my experience with Ernst & Young, I realized, wait a minute, if I really want to create a tremendous company and I really want to have the growth that's necessary to compete in the world of transportation, I need to start thinking about us being not 10 million, but 100 million and 500 million. And that was very, very significant for me, because as soon as I kind of wrapped my head around that idea, you start to make all of your decisions differently. Mm-hmm. You start to, prepare for the future and really kind of layer your and everything else to scale.
That is an amazing, thank you. That is amazing, because so often the view of the CEO, the founder of the company, defines the worldview of the organization, and I could not agree with you more. It's your vision of the future, and what you're willing to do, the possible outcome. That's the only way you can realize those kind of outcomes, I think. I don't think you can luck into it. You really need to be intentional, especially if you want to move to that level of revenue and that scale of an organization.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree completely, although I will tell you in some of the other things that I've learned, and I'll be perfectly honest because I'm a pretty transparent person, but I also realized along the way that although I had big vision, which is great, and I think a CEO needs that, I also can be a little bit of a chocolatey mess when it comes to the details. So I understood how important it is to surround myself with really incredible talent. And, you know, I think that this is another thing that I had learned in my conversations with some of the people that I was exposed to through my relationship with Ernst & Young, and they just are just a huge promoter of entrepreneurs, so I was very fortunate to be able to have these different people to work with and act as my kind of unofficial peer group, so to speak. I mean, that's what they did. They gave me a lot of guidance and perspective and different views, and people that had been through kind of the phase in the company that I was either going through at the time or I'm looking towards going to ahead. And it was really terrific to have that, and it helped me understand who I had to put in place to help execute my vision.
Well, you know, as I said earlier in the show with one of the earlier guests, I look for and hope for learning moments on Critical Mass Coast to Coast where something that the guest is talking about is transferable and maybe inspirational to the audience. And I think the conversation that we just had, Carol, fits very well up in that, in my hope it meets that goal, because I think hopefully people that listen to the show either live or at the future, you know, as a podcast on iTunes or whatever, come away with the sense that if they want their business to be at a certain revenue level, then it's incumbent on them to start thinking and acting that way. And then what was really powerful, I heard you say, really the kind of decisions that you make subsequent to that realization.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, it was very, very important to understand. And, you know, one of the things that I've kind of gone through recently, you know, we've really maxed out with my team. We wound up doing last year $10.4 million with 8 people. And of those 8, 4 of them were kind of on the front lines handling, you know, the bulk of the transactions with our customers. So, I mean, that's really, really an unbelievable efficiency, obviously a testament to my team. They're fantastic. But that you can't keep going like that. I mean, there came a realization that we have to start to do things differently now to get to the next level that we want to reach.
There is an amazing book by Keith McFarlane with the title The Breakthrough Company, mm-hmm. which was an exhaustive survey of Inc. 500 companies. You might be familiar with it.
I actually picked it up very recently. I can't wait to read it.
Okay. I think you'll find your talking, your views, I think you'll find support in that book, and you'll also find additional kind of context that will continue to help you. So I'm glad you got the book.
Thank you.
I wonder if you could share with our audience a valuable lesson that you've learned in your business career, but it came by virtue of a difficult or, dare I say, a painful experience.
Okay. I'd like to say that probably the most painful experience that I've had maybe in my entire working career, and I'm not going to tell you how many years that's been, so I'll leave that as a mystery, but it's considered a few, but I found out 5 years ago that my current employer was actually not living up to the terms of his contract, so to speak, and it forced me into making a decision. I was very, very betrayed. I couldn't believe it. It was really one of the most painful and difficult things that I had been through. I just couldn't even imagine what had been going on behind my back and the financial implications that it had. It was that point that it was actually the birth of the company and the start of CB in the form that it's in now. It taught me huge lessons about what not to do and what was important to do, the importance of being ethical, the importance of being honest, the importance of being loyal, and everything that our company and my team puts out there. And I think that it's one of the reasons that we are successful. It sounds sometimes very simple. Yeah, sure, everyone says, you know, you can trust me, blah, blah, blah. But really and truly, the corporations that work with us know that we don't disconnect from them. My team is engaged constantly. They can have something that's going on, a shipment that's important to them. They know that we are on it all the time, you know, in the evening, on the weekends. And I think that just having been through something that didn't work well and ultimately really exploded on me and hurt me and, you know, left me feeling, you know, that it wasn't a good deal, led the company now to evolve into something that's just fantastic.
I ask that question regularly on Critical Mass Coast to Coast and our other show, Critical Mass, the radio show. And I'm always interested to see how foundational the answer to that question can be. And foundational, I mean, it becomes such a critical element of how that leader now approaches the business. That's why I started asking that question, because what I find is it may have happened 5 years ago, it may have happened longer than 5 years ago, but when I listen to the answer, I get a sense that the lesson is very current, and it's one that won't quickly be forgotten.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I think that part of what makes our company successful is that we are very good relationship builders. I mean, we understand how to be a strategic partner. We understand how to build those enduring commitments with our customers, and that we become not just somebody. We're not selling our customers a product. We're really listening to what they need, and we look at ourselves, and we are an extension of their supply chain. And so there's a different mindset there, as opposed to, boy, we're really going to, you know, get over on them or something. And that's not it. And I think that when people that you work with understand that you really are in a long-term relationship with them, that has really helped. And, you know, that's something that's very, very important. And the relationship building piece has, you know, always been something that myself and the team has really excelled at. And being virtual again, it takes a whole different kind of twist to be able to do that, because we're not in front of these people. At least my team isn't very often, but I'm not that regularly. But you have to become very good communicators and transparent communicators and keep people informed and be visible and everything else, so that they realize, even though I can't see you and you're not in the same room with me, I know that you're there. And as I said earlier, we don't disconnect from our clients. And I think that that's really been something that's been very, very important and has been a component of our success.
I dare to say, being able to lead a virtual company, and we have clients on the West Coast that are virtual companies, and learning how to be effective in what is still kind of a non-standard environment, although I think with technology, et cetera, it's becoming more of the norm, not the exception, although it is, for employees, few probably have worked in their second virtual company. You know, it's kind of their first experience in a virtual company, because it's a relatively not. If you learn that skill of being able to be authentic and have good communications and build relationships and do those things virtually, I do think that skill, that's an internal skill learned for your own company's good, is you can translate that to how you build relationships with your clients who are across the country, who aren't
Absolutely.
In the same city maybe where you are located as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, Rick, I mean, one of the foundations of the company, as I said earlier, is trust. And there's got to be an incredible component of trust when you're running a virtual company. Yeah, I mean, the IT can allow us to look at who's on the servers when, whatever, but that's really not what's important. You know, the important to me is that I trust that every day my team is out there, they're representing the company, they're interacting with our clients. I trust that they do the right thing all the time, and they do. My customers, on the other hand, trust that we have their agenda at the forefront of, you know, how we operate each day. They trust that we're there for them, that we're not going to let them down. We're going to give them capacity in a tight market. When they tender us their merchandise that's, you know, often very, very critical, time-sensitive shipments, they know that when they give it to us, we're going to execute every single time. And the trust factor is just so, so important in a virtual environment. It's what holds us together. I mean, it really is, and I'm very, very fortunate that we've been successful at hiring people and putting that out into the marketplace, that we are a company to be trusted.
And on that note, Carol Borden, the CEO of CB Transportation. Let me ask you, how would someone find you online?
Online, you would go to www.cbtransportation.com.
Pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Pretty easy. I like to keep it simple.
Exactly. Why confuse things? If I can say that, sorry if it sounds unprofessional, but I've enjoyed your energy and spirit and your willingness to share and your success. So thanks for being a friend of Critical Mass Coast to Coast, and I appreciate the time and thought you've put into preparing and being on our show today.
Thank you for having me, Rick. It's been my absolute pleasure.
It's been fun and my pleasure as well. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope you've enjoyed our show today, and the three guests have provided you with new ideas, information, and perspectives that you, our listening audience, can use to make better decisions. I'd also like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring this show. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. And if you'd like to learn more about their magazines, because they have 19 regional publications, then visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. If you'd like to learn more about CEO peer groups, please visit website www.executiveforums.com. And if you're listening to us live right now on octalkradio.net, stay tuned as my business partner, Doug Gefeller, is preparing for his show this week, which is Critical Mass, The Coaching Perspective. And I think it would be a good use of your time to leave the computer turned on to octalkradio.net, listen to the show. If you want to log on their community chat room and post a thought that Paul can bring to Doug's attention, I know Doug always enjoys that interaction with the audience, and I would encourage you to do that. But until the next show of Critical Mass, the radio show, this is the host, Rick Franzi, saying, I hope all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass Coast to Coast, only on octalkradio.net.